The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, happy New Year's Eve to anybody who is listening to this show, whether you're listening to it live on Sunday night on New Year's Eve or you're listening to it a couple of days later. Welcome. It is the Al Gattullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer, a best of version. This is a new segment, but the next three segments will be stuff that I've done just recently. Coming up in just about 10 minutes, John Schneider, the actor, and now Moonshiner, his Revenuer's Reserve. It's out now. We will dive back into that interview that just happened a couple of weeks ago. Great interview with John. Had a great time talking to him about the Moonshine as well as acting on Smallville and Dukes of Hazzard. It was a lot of fun. Honored to have talked to John for even just a few minutes. He made you feel like I had known him for 30 years. That's how comfortable he made me. And that's pretty awesome when you're a celebrity of you know, a pretty significant stature, let's put it this way, in the TV world. And certainly John Schneider is that. You all remember him as Bo Duke. You also remember him as Jonathan Kent on the series Smallville. So a great discussion with John about Moonshine. And then Scott Wells for the final two segments of the program from Bolero Snort about the beer bill and all this nonsense that's going on. We taped that back in early December. And an interview I felt relevant to share again with everybody in the audience if you missed it the first time around. And with the beer bill set to expire, you know, very soon. In fact, the rules for New Jersey go back into effect on January 1. And then shortly after that, this bill dies in committee. And then they have to go back and start all over again, which is it's just not a good thing. And that's really what I wanted to talk about here in this final segment here, or first segment, final segment, live segment, whatever you want to call it, here of the Al Gattullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. The news for New Jersey has not been good. It started out with a lot of hope and promise the first 5 months of the year. A lot of lobbying, a lot of negotiating back and forth. Finally, the legislature puts together a bill that looks like it will pass. They wanted to put all of these other elements in it about, you know, liquor license laws and things of that nature. They finally realized, hey, look, it's not going to come out of committee to come to a vote. So we need to really pare this down a little bit and do some things that we know will pass quickly to help the breweries out. The legislature did their job. They went in, they crafted a bill that helps the breweries, specifically the breweries, nobody else. They passed it unanimously right before the end of the legislative session in June. Bill goes to the governor's desk. He ignores it. He had promised to sign it, told the breweries, if you do this, this, and this through spokespeople, we'll get it done. I'll sign it. Okay? He lied. He lied to them. Now, he could sit there and spin it however he wants. This bill doesn't do enough. This, blah, blah, blah. But somebody with the slightest bit of common sense would understand that what the breweries are asking for and what you want to do to change liquor in the state of New Jersey are incompatible with one another, because the breweries can't serve wine. They can't serve hard liquor. They can't do those things. All they want is to be able to brew their beer, sell it, and have a little bit of breathing room to be able to hold events and things of that nature. Instead of being told you can only hold 25 events a year, your TV can only be a certain size, all of this gobbledygook nonsense that they seem to arbitrarily have placed on the Brewers. And it's wrong. All of it's wrong. The governor even admitted it was wrong. And yet, he had the ability through executive order to take care of it, didn't do it. They crafted a law and a series of laws, right, to help the breweries. Passes unanimously. You never see anything pass unanimously in New Jersey. Never. And yet he still, well, I want this, this, and this. Then he pares it down. He conditionally vetoes the bill in September, late September. Says, okay, oh no, actually, he didn't do it until much later. He had kept saying he was going to conditionally veto it. Then, he finally vetoes it and says, this is what I want, pocket licenses. Now, not a bad idea. If you're holding on to a license for a long period of time and you're not using it, yes, you should have to give it up. I don't have an issue with that. Fair market value, whatever the market dictates, whatever. You should have to give it up. If you've been holding on to it for 10 years, you're not using it. You're waiting for the right offer to come along. And I'm sorry, I understand that we live in a capitalist society, but at some point you have to, you know what, to get off the pot, right? But the legislature's like, no, we're in lame duck. We got about 6 weeks. We got more important things to do. We're not bringing this up. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, the legislature, to say, hey, look, maybe they saw this and said, look, we can't do this because this one doesn't equate to the other. But it could just simply be because of the fact that the governor, his wife is running for Senate, U.S. Senate, trying to take Bob Menendez's seat. He's in a lame duck now, and they're not going to bend over to give him what he wants. Now, regardless of what it is, they have decided not to take it up. They have decided nothing is going to happen as of this recording. Now, it could have changed. I'm recording this on the 18th of December. In 10 days, 12 days, whatever it is, things could have changed. I don't think so. Okay, that's a pretty safe bet in my book. What is sad now is that we're seeing breweries closing. We're seeing them closing left and right in New Jersey. A tax revenue to the state of New Jersey of almost $2 billion. And yet you have a governor who claims to be a champion of craft beer, claims to be a supporter of craft beer, and he has done nothing but the sort. He has let it go. He could have solved this problem by executive order. He could just simply say, no rules until they pass the bill that I want. Or not no rules, but we won't enforce the rules that are on the books until we get a bill passed, whether it's this year, next year, whatever. He could give these people some relief, and he doesn't. And what's going to happen coming into the 2024? I think you're going to see more breweries closing. I think you're going to see more things happening. And I'll be honest. I mean, again, I'm not a small business owner. I'm not a brewery owner, and I don't know if I would do this if I were a brewery owner. But the rebel in me wants to say, I'm going to continue doing what I want. You come after me and find me. You come after me and tell me I have to close. Remember, there's still a lawsuit out there from Death of the Fox. They still have a lawsuit going, suing the governor. Now, if Chuck succeeds with both ends of this lawsuit, the rules go away. Forget about the law that's passed or not passed. The rules simply disappear. So, and it's not as easy as that. I understand that. I just think it's such short-sightedness by the governor of the state of New Jersey when beer is, doing very well in New York. It's doing well in Pennsylvania, even though they have their own set of restrictions, et cetera, et cetera. You have neighboring states that are succeeding and doing well, and you have a state in New Jersey that could really blow the doors off of this thing, and they choose not to because of the short-sightedness of one man, Governor Phil Murphy. That's exactly why they're being short-sighted. It's all because of the governor. Could have signed the bill, had a victory, unanimous bill, touted around the state. They would have regaled him as a hero. Maybe they take up the rest of the liquor license stuff. Maybe they let it die. Who knows? I agree. That's probably the only thing I agreed with the governor on when I was on WNYC with him. If the bill signs the way it is, the rest of the liquor stuff disappears. And I don't disagree with him on that. All right. When we come back after a short break, actor John Schneider with his new Moonshine Revenuers Reserve, and then Scott Wells for the last two segments of the program. This is the best of the Al Gattulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer.
Somebody save me. Let you all
And welcome back to the Algatulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. You know that theme song. If you are a fan of the television show Smallville, as I was, you know that the gentleman, the actor who played the father of Superman, the adopted father of Superman, Clark Kent, was one Jonathan Kent, but one actor by the name of John Schneider, who is not only an actor, a filmmaker, a musician, he's a moonshiner now. That's right. Revenuer's Reserve is out now. It comes in three flavors, original, blackberry, and apple pie. For more info on it and how you can order it, just go to revenuersreserve.com. That's the website for more information on all of that. But it is an honor to welcome the man you may know as Bo Duke from the Dukes of Hazzard, or Jonathan Kent from the series Smallville. It's John Schneider. John, good day to you, sir. How are you?
Hey, good day to you. It was so great. You know, it's for 40 years. When people introduced me, 45 years, they play the Dukes theme. It was so great to hear Remy Zero. Yay, Remy Zero!
Yeah! We haven't heard that in quite some time, so there you go.
No, that was so great. I'm honored to be on your show. Folks, just before we pressed the red button, we were talking about Dukes of Hazzard, certainly, but also Smallville.
Right.
And how it's the shining, I think it's the shining gem in the Superman crown. I really do.
100%.
I think Smallville, yeah. Smallville is the quintessential story of good old Clark Kent. You know, he was not Superman yet, so we had to pretend we didn't know where the story was going.
Right.
And it was just great. 10 years yeah. That show ran.
Amazing. Amazing. Now, congratulations on the success of the Moonshine. Revenuer's Reserve sold out at the launch party earlier this week. That is incredible. Did the Dukes of Hazzard have anything to do with you getting into the Moonshine business?
Well, yeah. You know, I've wanted to for decades.
Right.
Way back when we were doing the show, I'd go do a personal appearance somewhere, and invariably someone, usually a man or woman in uniform, would whisper to me, "Hey, you like moonshine?" And I'd say, "Well, yeah, who doesn't?" And they'd say, "Come with me." And they'd take me to some closet somewhere where all the contraband liquor was,
right?
You know, and right off the bat, I thought, you know, this is the stuff that was too good for the revenuers to bust up with a baseball bat. So I've wanted to do a moonshine called Revenuer's Reserve for nearly 40 years. But it's, you know, life kind of goes in different directions.
Sure.
And this year was a particularly tough year for me. But mm-hmm. in it, I met a woman who's a widow, and she and her husband have a wine called Sorvino Vino. And this is Paul Sorvino's wife.
Oh, Dee Dee. Yes, we've had, yeah. I on my day job, I work with Joe Piscopo on his morning show. We do a political talk show.
Oh,
and
great.
Joe was friends with Paul for years and his wife, Dee Dee.
Yeah.
So, oh, wow, it all comes full circle. Look at that.
Yeah, it was amazing. So she said, look, the first year is just going to be so hard. Because we met just when she had gone through the first year after Paul's death.
Right.
And she said, what is it you want to do? And I said, well, I've always wanted to do this moonshine. And she said, well, let's do that. So, you know, Dee Dee, so you know why it's successful. Because she will not. We had an order. Our first order yesterday outside of our launch party was one distributor ordered 900 bottles.
Wow.
Which apparently is crazy good. So I think we got Buck Owen said decades ago, we got a tiger by the tail here. I don't know if you've seen the commercials, but I've shot two little commercials here at the John Schneider Studios where the revenuer is searching for me, looking for me. And he's got the baseball bat, but then he tastes it and says, oh, forget the bats. Bring me my jug.
And that's great.
So it's a lot of fun, and it's a great product. And I'm going to be very, you know, I need to have my mind into something. I need to be a little distracted here because I'm not quite at the end of my first year. And folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about, my beautiful wife passed away February 21st of this year. Yeah. And when something that tragic happens in your life, you have a choice. You can bury your head in the sand and go away, or you can do as Alicia, my wife, would say, you can go do.
Right.
So I've spent this year going and doing, and the proof there is She was writing a book. She had stage four breast cancer, and she had written a book called In the Driver's Seat about how to take charge of your own diagnosis. So we were very successful with that. The first time she was diagnosed, we turned a 6-month life expectancy into 5 years. Wow. So it was, I hate being the poster child for all of that, but since I am, I finished her book. It's called In the Driver's Seat. I did a tribute album, not only to my bride, but to everyone who has lost someone that they love. There's a new album called We're Still Us. You don't all of a sudden not become, a couple anymore. You know, Alicia is in many, many ways more alive and well in my heart than she was here. Mm-hmm. You know, when someone has a ailment like that, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
But I finished the book, did an album, did a movie that's out with Jay Sekulow and his family called Jingle Smells, which is so much fun, and then did the moonshine. So I chose not to bury my head in the sand. I'm from Mount Kisco. I'm just from across the Tappan Zee.
That's right.
Yeah. So you know we're nothing if not tenacious.
Exactly.
So
and I have to tell you, John, as a cancer survivor myself, I'm now 7 years in remission from Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's one of those things.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You can bury your head in the sand, like you said, or you could pick yourself up and keep moving. And I choose to keep moving. And I think that's a fantastic positive attitude to have. And I want to circle back to the moonshine for a moment.
Because sure.
How did you come up with the blackberry and apple pie flavors for the moonshine?
Well, when we went to several distilleries and sampled their products, and the one thing that was important to me, because I'm a taste guy, mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to add something. So the apple pie that we have, I'm talking about changing the name of apple pie on our next batch to apple fritter.
Oh, okay.
Because an apple fritter's got all those great little burnt corners on it,
right?
So it's more crispy. It doesn't fall on your coffee as easily. So I'm trying to add a little bit of burnt sugar taste to the apple pie to make it more apple fritter. Same thing with the blackberry. Try to add a little bit of what we have down here in Louisiana. I live in Louisiana,
right?
We've got muscadine. We've got all kinds of stuff here. So I wanted to make it personal. And with many of the people that we talked to, they were like, well, yeah, you know, we'll slap a label. And I said, no, I don't want to slap a label on something. I want to actually have something to do with how this tastes.
Sure.
You know, because it's all about the taste. It's all about the look of the bottle and the label. So with Appalachian Distillery, it's family run. And I say, how long have you been doing this? And they say, well, 10 years legally. But they've got a great picture of their grandfather who apparently spent 10 years in jail around Prohibition time.
Wow.
For doing just what they're doing now, but they're doing it legally.
Right.
So right. I wanted to identify a group of people that I could actually work with and not just, you know. I didn't want to just be a kind of a peripheral figure. I want to get my hands into the mash, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And these folks were all about that. So we're working on a couple of new flavors for next year. And I'm very excited about it. You know, I tell people, look, with Dukes of Hazzard, I've been on probation since 1979. So it's about time I had my own moonshine.
Exactly. We're talking with actor, filmmaker, musician, and moonshiner, John Schneider, Revenuers Reserve. It's out now. It did sell out this week, but they are fulfilling orders. So it comes in three flavors, original, blackberry, apple pie. For more info on it and how you can order it, just head over to revenuersreserve.com as we're here on the Al Gattullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970, The Answer. And John, before I run out of time here, I grew up watching Dukes of Hazzard. Love the show. We talked about it before we started the interview. But of course, I was a comic book geek back in the day. I had in my collection before I sold it a few years ago, I had over 20,000 comic books in my collection.
Wow.
A lot of it having to do with Superman and Superboy and the mythos of all of Superman. A huge fan of Smallville, obviously. What was the best part of playing such an iconic character like Jonathan Kent, who essentially shapes Clark Kent's views on life and how to deal with the responsibility of his superpowers?
Well, the way that Miles and Al crafted that character in just the pilot was so wonderful. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, you know, I was a big fan of Michael Landon and Bonanza and Little House on the Prairie and all that.
Sure.
But a huge fan, obviously, of Uncle Jesse of Denver Pyle, mm-hmm. who played my Uncle Jesse on Dukes. So when I read the pilot to Smallville, I saw a lot of Uncle Jesse and Jonathan Kent. And I wanted to kind of elaborate on that. That's why Jonathan Kent is so, he's stern. You remember, I got a lot of grief because I wouldn't let him play football.
Right.
But by the, at the same time, people would say, I love how when you're talking to him, you got your hands on his shoulders, you hug him, you kiss him on the back of his head and you know, tell him you're proud of him. And I think right from the very beginning, Jonathan Kent was the best written father on television. And I like to think I took their 7 and made it a 10, but they delivered a absolute 7, which is amazing because, they had little kids at home.
Right.
And you treat a 3-year-old differently than you treat a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever had a 16-year-old, you know what I mean?
Oh, I know. My son's 20 now, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was. They did an amazing job, and when I read it, I thought, no, this is really great. So I'm honored to have been part of Smallville when especially military folks come up. Because Smallville started in 2001.
Right.
We were filming when the planes hit the towers.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So I have a lot of folks that will come to me and say, we binged watch DVDs of Smallville in Baghdad.
Oh, wow.
So it's important to me that Smallville is has made such a wonderful, wonderful mark on people's lives. Dukes, too. You know, Dukes,
sure.
Dukes is amazing. But there's something about the relationship between Clark Kent and Jonathan Kent that really stands out. For me, it's very much like the relationship that Bo Duke had with Uncle Jesse.
Well, 100%. John, you nailed it on that show, and you certainly nailed it with this moonshine. My guest, he's been actor, filmmaker, musician, moonshiner, John Schneider's Revenuer's Reserve. It's out now, comes in 3 flavors, original blackberry apple pie. Obviously, like John said, they're going to be doing some tweaking of it for next year. But for more info on it and how you can order it, you head over to revenuersreserve.com. We'll have a link posted on our Facebook and Twitter pages as well, so you can click right on it and order it. John, thank you so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it. This was a great conversation. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas,
hope to talk to you again
friend.
Soon.
Oh, I'll be here. Thank you, my friend. Merry Christmas, everybody. You take care. Hug on somebody and tell them you love them. Do it today. Do it every day.
Absolutely.
Be good.
Up next, Scott Wells from Bolero Snort from the brewery. 2 segments. We got a lot to talk about New Jersey beer and the restrictions and all kinds of other stuff that's going on, and maybe some surprises as well. That's coming up next on the Al Gattulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. Welcome back to the Al Gattulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer, and we are coming to you from Bolero Snort Brewing in the offices of Bolero Snort Brewing. Last time I was with Scott Wells, we were in the actual brewery where all the action was happening. Really, there was no action. It was just Scott pouring a beer for a TV interview. But anyway, he is an old friend of the show. No, I don't want a beer. I'm good for right now. But see, I knew you were going to ask that. He's an old friend of the show. His brewery, along with other great breweries across the Garden State, have been trying to change things in Trenton. They got it done, but the governor has now conditionally vetoed the bill, sent it back to a lame duck legislature that has roughly 3 weeks to make the changes that he wants, which is essentially pocket licenses. We'll get to that in a second. BolaroSnort.com, that's the brewery website for info on how to get your beer fixed here in beautiful Carlstadt, New Jersey. Let me welcome back to the Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer, Scott Wells. Scott, how are you?
I'm great, Al. First time, long time. How are you?
Very nice. Let's talk about the Giants. No. But let's get right to it. The governor conditionally vetoes the bill. He sends it back to the legislature because he felt it didn't do enough to change the liquor license laws. Why, in your opinion, is he trying to lump one thing in with the other?
As we know, Phil Murphy really wants to overhaul the entire system, which is antiquated and based on, you know, prohibition age laws and regulations. So we get it and we appreciate that. But the popularity surrounding reform is really based on the grassroots efforts by the breweries. So the constituency really has rallied around modernizing the rules that the breweries exist under, even though those rules were created entirely by Phil Murphy's administration. So this bill that we put together and we've been working on now for a year and a half and really fighting these rules for 5 years now, this bill was designed to just scale the clock back to the rules that we worked under until 2018 when this administration imposed new rules upon us. The governor is now trying to use our popularity to try to force through other much needed reforms. And we do understand that they are needed and critical to other businesses. But right now the breweries are being held hostage, where our bill apparently will not go through unless the legislature agrees to support other Murphy reforms. The crazy part is the conditional veto of the bill was very much scaled down from Murphy's initial proposal. It's watered down. There's not a lot of teeth to it. It's clear that the governor had to back off of a lot of what he wanted to achieve. But even with this pared down version of reform, the legislature's still not going for it. So now the legislature's signaling they're not going to sign off on the CV. They're not going to concur with it, which means the clock is going to tick midnight and the brewery rules go back into effect, and we have no relief in sight.
Right. And what ends up happening, if this doesn't get done, the bill dies, and you guys have to start this process all over again, right?
So the conversations have really surrounded around, are we willing to go and put the same bill back together and work on this again next year? And what, unfortunately, politicians don't realize is this has been a great expense to us in terms of time. We've been working on this for 5 years. We spent years, you know, kind of negotiating with the state's ABC, and that got us nowhere. And then we spent years of time and money and lobbying power to get this to where it is. We're not politicians. This isn't what we do for a living. This is a distraction from operating our own businesses. And we're being forced into this political arena that we never should have been involved in the first place. The idea that the government's trying to remove the restrictions and remove the barricades from us has really turned around. And it's almost like the brewers are being told, you need to go and be the cheerleaders for this greater reform, even though the people that are against the reform are the same bars and restaurants and liquor stores that we survive by selling beer to. So this has created an adversarial atmosphere where our customers, the bars and the stores, are mad at us because the government isn't removing the restrictions from us. So now the climate in New Jersey is, it is more difficult than ever to sell your beer through distribution, but also we're not going to be able to sell in our tasting rooms 4 weeks from now because we're going to go back to an environment that isn't welcoming to customers. So we can't sell it here and we can't sell it there. And now the government is at fault for the whole thing.
Right. I mean, it's crazy. And a bill, by the way, for those of you who haven't listened to the show in the last 6 months, that passed unanimously in both houses, which is very rare to do in Trenton. We're talking with Scott Wells, co-owner of Bolero Snort Brewery, located in Carlstadt, New Jersey. For more info on Bolero, head over to BoleroSnort.com. We're here on the Al Gattullo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. Now, recently, DoorDash was given approval to deliver alcohol to New Jersey households. And last week, Instacart is able to do the same thing through Wegmans. How does this affect your business?
Unfortunately, this is going to impact the business by making it more readily available for out-of-state products to get into your hands and into your homes, because these are ways that distribution products, which largely favor our out-of-state competitors, now have more means of finding their ways to you. So the state has shown the interest and ability to create special rulings by avoiding going to the legislature and creating new laws that favor one aspect of the industry or the other. So we've seen special rulings in the past year that have allowed golf courses to get permits to sell alcohol basically overnight, Instacart and DoorDash to be able to get distribution beer from stores, not from breweries, but from stores specifically into your hands, right down to a special ruling last week that allowed a distributor in New Jersey that was going out of business to circumvent the rules on a prohibition of selling certain products in the state for 12 months, largely at the detriment of local manufacturing. So the ABC is quick to put in rules that they view as favorable to businesses when those businesses aren't the breweries, but when the breweries need help, we have to go seek legislative efforts, which we've done, succeeded with, but still cannot get actual relief.
And essentially, if I'm a person who, let's say I go to Instacart and I go to the Wegmans website and I look and I see Bolero Snort, I can buy your beer at Wegmans and have it shipped to me, sent right to my door. You get a piece of that, but it's not the same thing as if you were home delivering it to somebody or if I actually went to the brewery and bought the beer itself.
And that's correct, but you're speaking about Bolero, which we're fortunate enough to be able to have our products in those stores,
right,
where Wegmans, which is a great proponent of local brewing and quality beer, Wegmans still only carries a small portion of breweries in New Jersey. So when you're trying to get an order from home and you're going to Wegmans or these other DoorDash companies, you're limited to product that they've selected to purchase for their stores, which is going to largely reflect probably 90 to 95% products that were made outside of New Jersey. Trust me, I'm thrilled with the fact that you go to Wegmans and buy my beer, but that's not the case for probably 125 or more of the 141 breweries in New Jersey.
Right. So Devil's Creek, on Tuesday, we're taping this interview on Wednesday. Just on Tuesday, Devil's Creek has announced this weekend is their last weekend in business. They're going out of business. Another Jersey brewery bites the dust. Senator Scutari has basically said they have no interest in bringing this bill back up and with the conditions that the governor is asking for. And essentially what the governor is asking for is for pocket licenses. So for those that, I mean, as far as I understand it, a pocket license, somebody that has a liquor license, maybe they have sat on it for a while, they haven't used it. So basically what he wants to do is, if you're not going to use it within a certain period of time, you need to either sell it or you need to give it up and give it back to the town that you got it in, which I don't disagree with him on that. But again, what he's asking for and what you guys are asking for are two entirely separate things. Is there anything that you guys can do to move this along, you know, to try and get the legislature to say, hey, we'll agree to these things?
I mean, at this point, my optimism has really run out. The pocket license aspect of this has really grown kind of comical because the requirement to return pocket licenses into the pool already exists in regulation. There's a process that you have to go through to not lose your license, but there are people that have owned and held pocket licenses for decades at this point, and it's used for speculation. It's an asset that appreciates, so they don't want to give those up. And in many cases, pocket licenses are held specifically to eliminate competition within communities, where you might own two licenses in town with only one in use, which eliminates someone else from getting a license to compete against you. We have existing regulations on the books that keep that from happening, but those regulations haven't been enforced. So I'm kind of at a loss to understand why we're not just enforcing the existing regulations versus putting a law in place tied to a brewery law that they're really separate issues.
Right, because you can't sell hard liquor. So what difference does it make if there's a pocket license in effect for a brewery or not? You have to purchase a separate license that's less than what a liquor license is, but all you can do is brew beer.
The title of my license is a limited license. The reason why it's limited, we are very limited in what we're able to sell. We can only sell malt beverages that are manufactured within our buildings. We don't have the ability to sell other beer, wine, spirits, food, any of the other things. So the bill at hand here addresses events and food and merchandise and other things that really have nothing to do with alcohol. The limitation that we see right now is we can't compete against a bar. You can't come here and get a beer and a shot. You can't get a glass of wine. You can't get most other things. We're not competing with bars at all. We're a very different subset of business. And the idea of operating a tasting room and a brewery is to introduce customers to the products that we make and familiarize them to those products, because then it's easier for them to go and buy those exact same products at the licensed bars. So without the ability for us to really encourage that, we're going to continue to lose out to these other breweries from out of state. And the point that I've been kind of harping on, five of the largest 25 craft breweries in the entire country exist within about a half hour's drive of New Jersey. but there isn't a single brewery in New Jersey that's within the top 50 in production. Those breweries are able to compete against us because they're allowed to have events and food and all these other crazy things in their breweries where they make money, and they use that to market against us in our own densely populated state. So we're at a disadvantage to compete against them in our home state. So if you want to have that great brewery experience that most of the country enjoys, where you get to go and hang out at a brewery and sit down, enjoy a beer or maybe a slice of pizza or a burger from a food truck and listen to some live music, and you live in New Jersey, I've got great news for you. You could do that in about 45 minutes. Anyone who lives in New Jersey is about 45 minutes away from that experience. They just have to cross a border into Pennsylvania, Delaware, or New York to get it. Right. They got to take their money with them.
Yeah, it's awful. It's an awful way to do business. All right. Scott Wells is with me here at Bolero Snort Brewery. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back for part two. We're going to have we're going to talk about some other things that are going on in the state of New Jersey. Some good news stuff. It's the holidays are approaching. We've got some good news stuff to talk about. We'll do that next on the Algatulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. Welcome back to the Algatulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. We're coming to you from Bolero Snort Brewery, located in Kroelstadt, New Jersey, and Scott Wells rejoins me. So, last time I was here, Scott, I asked you about the two guilds in New Jersey, the Brewers Guild of New Jersey and the New Jersey Brewers Association, and I asked you about the possibility of merging and becoming one guild again. You have an announcement to make here, so let us make it.
What did I tell you last time? I don't remember. Did I give anything up then?
You said there. You know, we're talking, and you essentially said, I have kept the Brewers Association involved in all of the stuff that's going on. We would love to maybe get together back together again one day, but we don't know if that's going to happen. So,
yeah, I mean, the existence of two separate organizations really had more to do with the idea of different priorities, which I personally don't think ever really existed. There was the sentiment of one group kind of representing the smaller breweries and one group representing the larger breweries, but that wasn't really the case. So going through this whole political nonsense that we've dealt with for the last year and a half, we have been working together hand in hand. And, it took some very calm, cool conversations between everyone. I'll give most of the credit to Crystal Lockman from X and Arrow Brewing. Mm-hmm. She put the most effort into this whole thing, but I guess I could announce without the paperwork being done, but we have a handshake agreement, an agreement to terms that we are going to reunite the two organizations. And I guess it's great timing to do it with everything that's going on politically. Mm-hmm. But we're going through the process right now of rejoining and becoming one organization and having one voice to represent all of New Jersey beer within the state and beyond. And I'm very excited for this, this new endeavor to kind of reinvent what these organizations are and what they do. With the merger, I'm very, very hopeful that we're going to be able to do more than just politics. And while we've been very effective politically, for lack of getting a bill signed at this point, while we've been very effective politically, there's a lot more that we need to offer to the breweries and to the consumers in the state. So this new organization should have more people involved with more volunteer hours that can do things like festivals and symposiums and educational components and really elevate New Jersey craft beer to where it should be and where it can be. So I think the future is very bright now that we have this going, and we should be finalized with the merger by the first of the year, which is ironic because that's the day that the clock goes back to our regulations.
Exactly. And we'll speak about the festivals in just a second, but will the name change? Will it be the same? Will it either be the Brewers Guild or the New Jersey Brewers Association, or an amalgam of the two?
Yeah, I mean, with the merger, it's the Brewers Guild of New Jersey is going to remain the body. So that will remain the name. I'm sure at some point we'll get tired of that name as we do every 4 or 5 years and change it to something else,
right.
Which it did come up in conversation. And I just said no, because it's not something I want to deal with right now. It will remain the Brewers Guild of New Jersey, which is I think that really helps with where we are right now, because that's the National Association, the Brewers Association reaches out to us, the politicians, they know us, they know who we are. So I think that really, it helps with the continuity. But at the same time, it does give us the ability to really focus on some new efforts and outreach. I'm not shy to say that we've struggled in certain areas. And, I don't think we always communicate very well with our membership and beyond our membership. Mm-hmm. And that's been largely with everything we've had going on politically. We've been asking the consumers to write letters and put up posts and click links and send text messages and all these things. And there's a lot going on. And, you know, trying to make sure everyone's got the most updated info and is aware of everything that's going on. Now being united in one, that's going to be a lot easier. And even without the unification being finalized yet, you know, we've got a lot of information coming down from our lobbying firm that I'm taking, making sure every brewery has that, and it's the breweries in our group, the breweries in that group, and every contact we have in New Jersey beyond that, to really make sure everyone's on the same page, we're all working on the same effort. And you know, to this point, I don't think there is any agenda anywhere that there are breweries that are working against. We're all trying to get to the same thing. And then, you know, I'm sure there's going to come a time where we might have some competing priorities. We've seen that in more successful states like California.
Sure.
You know, their guild's got 500 brewery members, and they have subgroups because they have to lobby for different things at different times. We're not there yet. You know, where we think here in New Jersey we have some big breweries and small breweries, we don't. We're all small right. on the national scale. Mm-hmm. Even our largest brewery is still very small, so we've got a lot of work to do before we could worry about things of that nature.
And speaking of festivals, I got a little inside information, so I'm going to throw this out there to you. In July, there's going to be a festival that is going to take place. I don't want to say Central New Jersey, because does that really exist? Murphy said it does. I don't think it does. It's in the middle of New Jersey. Let's put it that way. You want to call it South Jersey, you can call it South Jersey. You want to call it North Jersey, that's fine. But there's an event that's going to be taking place first week of July, is the tentative date right now, and it's going to be called Brew Jersey, which I think is a really cool idea. All of the beers there will be from New Jersey breweries. There's going to be bands. There's going to be activity. There's going to be all kinds of really – well, let's say 90% of the beers are going to be from New Jersey. But there's going to be a lot of activity, and a lot of this is going to help out the brewers themselves, as well as, you know, educating people about New Jersey beer.
Yeah, it's not completely finalized yet, because they're still waiting on some paperwork and permits to come through, so we can't make a formal announcement on it, I guess. But it is going to be called Brew Jersey Save the Ales, which is an offshoot of the Brew Jersey Initiative, which was spearheaded by Jason Goldstein from Icarus Brewing, soon to be in Brick, New Jersey. And the initial Brew Jersey was a beer release that we all did collaboratively throughout the state, that's had a couple different versions, but the second version being Brew Jersey Sign the Bill, Phil. So the festival will be called Brew Jersey Save the Ales. And the preliminary work that we've put down for this festival, we do have a lot of fun stuff planned. It will be in July. It's scheduled to be in Branchburg. But we've already gotten commitments from some help from some heavy-hitter friends of ours from out of state that right. want to send some beer and help support us. And, you know, there's a big community of brewers. And nationwide, there's a lot of talk about what's going on in New Jersey. There's a lot of talk about, you know, from some competitors of craft beer, they see what's going on in New Jersey and they're kind of licking their lips, and they think they might be able to scale the clock back in other areas because of how we're kind of being mistreated politically here. So there's some concerns around the country about how things could get worse in some of the other states. So we've seen a lot of support from our friends in neighboring states and far beyond that want to be involved in this, because it's time to really modernize brewing, modernize small business, and try to get politics out of what we do.
100%. Now, you guys are doing your toy drive for children in the care of YCS, as well as to help out the which fire department is it that's helping out? Is it Hackensack? Hackensack Fire Department. And anyone who drops off an unwrapped gift from November 15th through December 16th, you're going to get 50% off your first pour. On Friday, December 15th, that evening, the Tiger Man Band is going to perform their Christmas Jams album, which is really cool. If you haven't seen those guys, you should definitely come down here and check it out. On Saturday, December 16th, from 5 to 8 p.m., which is the last day of the event, One Man Gathers will perform with local celebrity David Krumholtz, who is Bernard in the Santa Claus franchise. Now, if this bill doesn't get passed, things like this go away, right?
Yeah, it's funny. This is the prime example of something that we wouldn't be able to do. If we go back to the regulations as they were, we only get 25 special events per year. So we have to pick and choose what events we could actually do. What you just described is going to take up two of those 25 events, and we wouldn't be able to do the promotion around the beer for the toy drive. So this is a thing that's been near and dear to my heart for years. We've been doing this toy drive for years before the production facility was open. We used a partner bar for a long time that had a lot more capabilities to encourage people to get in there and drop off toys. I'm expecting this to be the biggest success year. I actually was notified yesterday by Alexis Deegan, who's been involved with our guilds for a long time, who's running a volunteer organization out of South Jersey, that her collection has been overabundant, and she's got a lot of collection points up in my area, so she's going to be able to contribute a lot of additional toys to our toy drive, and that goes directly to support YCS and underprivileged families directly in the lower Bergen County area. So everything from Hackensack down through Carlstadt, where we're located. So this one touches me. This is the most important event that we do every year for me, to make sure, you know, no family in the area goes needy for Christmas in one way or another. And I hate the idea of not being able to do that or not being able to make it a success. But I think that's what the politicians often don't see. They don't see the impact that we have in the community, and they think it's all dollars and cents and everything else that goes into it. And unfortunately, this is the type of thing that, you know, we could do a toy drive again next year and we have to burn most of our events on it. And we can't do things to make money, or, you know, by nature of the way the business goes, we have to prioritize money and all the events go to what generates the most profit and not does the most good.
Well, folks, what you can do at home. There are links everywhere. We'll post something on the Craft Beer Cast page. We'll post something on X that you can click on. Write your legislators. If you're in New Jersey, you live in New Jersey, it's a simple form. You click on it. You put in your information. You send it off. It's a form letter that basically says, hey, we care about the craft brewery industry in the state. We'd like you to, you know, consider these additions to the bill and to sign off on it and pass it so that Governor Murphy will put a signature on it before December 31st. My guest has been Scott Wells, co-owner of Bolero Snort Brewing, located in Carlstadt, New Jersey. Scott, thanks so much for having me here for a couple of segments today. I really do appreciate it. And congratulations on the guilds, you know, merging again, which is a great deal. And Brew Jersey next year is going to be a blast.
And thanks for having me, as always. I always appreciate you.
My thanks to everyone involved in the show over the last year, including my guests tonight on The Best Of, actor and moonshiner John Schneider, Scott Wells from Bolero Snort, and of course, last but not least, the great Buddy Watson. I hope you all have the happiest of New Year's. I will talk to you on the Joe Piscopo Show on Tuesday at 6 a.m. This has been the Al Gattulo Craft Beer Cast on AM 970 The Answer. Cheers, everybody, and Happy New Year.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.